Well, brethren, the title of this is A New World Disorder. And notice the dis is in parentheses. I gave a talk like this 20 years ago, and Steve Dyke recalled it. You gave that talk before. I said, well, I gave a talk like this. I called A New World Order. But I thought it was fitting here in Orlando, where we did this 20 years ago. I know because I remember turning 55. That was at the March convention. Now I'm 75. But we've got another new world order. The scripture, of course, in Revelation 20, a new heaven, a new earth, something we all look forward to. But I think there's some key events that have been going on in the world. Not probably going to tell you anything you don't know, but what we'll try to do is put them together and say, what do these things mean in whole? We see a lot of individual events, but can we put them together in a whole? The New World Order, that term first appeared back in 1991, and that's soon after we were here. President George H.W. Bush termed it after the Soviet Union fell, the perestroika, which, of course, the openness of the Soviet Union. We had new alliances being formed in Western Europe, and global changes were expected. That's going to say, we'll have political stability, and we're going to have worldwide peace. It's sort of like the Miss America pageant, right? What are you hoping for? Well, world peace. 10 years later, and I'm going to go by decades in some of this because there's so much in between. 10 years later, in 2001, the World Economic Forum, of course, the World Economic Forum coined this term and used it to advance what they had was the global agenda. There you see, remember, Arafat was there for that convention. The big thing was the let's push to get the Palestinians a state. There was great expectations, and they were giving 10 new suggestions for the new American president, who happened to be George H.W. Bush's son, George Bush. The whole idea of globalization was being attacked. Let's address that issue. We want it, but how are we going to address it? And can we find this common ground that we can expand and make the whole world wealthy? What happened? Of course, 9/11 happened. That was something that made the whole world irrelevant, whatever plans there were. 90 minutes on a late summer night or on a late summer morning, the world changed pretty much forever. 3,000 people killed, as you know, and probably the most egregious act of terrorism we ever saw, certainly the first ever on American soil. 10 years later, 2011, the Arab Spring, another big significant change in the world takes place in the next decade. The Middle East, everybody rose up across countries in the Middle East against their governments. Tunisia, Egypt, Syria, Libya, Yemen, they all cast off. What were the chains behind them? What was the difference in 2011? Now we got social media. We can broadcast this to the world. That's exactly what happened as the whole world witnessed these protests going across the whole Middle East. Let's advance another 10 years. 2021. A gangster regime declares war, or what was considered an event against a neighboring country, who they said was a threat. Yeah, you can see that threat, the largest country in the world. But, you know, that was not the first time that ever happened. Think back to 1939, before World War II. 1939, there was what was called the Winter War. Stalin offered to swap territory with Finland. Finland resisted. We're not going to do it. He wanted to use that for bases for Russia in the Baltic Sea and across all of Leningrad. And the isthmus that you see there sticks up between Finland and Russia and the Soviet Union. And he offered them a small piece just north of that isthmus called Karelia. Finland rejected it. The Soviets invaded the country. It's almost exactly what happened this time with Putin. You see, that little piece is what they wanted. Well, the Finnish found they couldn't fight against them, just as the Ukrainians did. We couldn't do this by ourselves, but the countries in the West said, you're doing a great job, but we're not going to help you. Sorry. So 9% of their territory, almost 10%, goes. Even though there was a poor performance by the Soviets, it was an encouragement to one man, Adolf Hitler, who was standing on the sidelines watching what was going on. So he believed that an attack on the Soviet Union could be successful if Germany went for it. 15 months later, this led to another war called a continuation war. Germany and Finland versus the Soviets, 1944. We jump up a little farther. That led then finally to the Korean War, 1950. Stalin was still in power. North Korea had become a puppet for the Soviets. And so they decided to invade South Korea. Of course, many, including one in our that I used to talk to a lot, Brother George Eldridge, who was here in Orlando. George was in that Korean War. It was interesting because it's called the Forgotten War amongst many, because the U.S. formed this military coalition and they wanted to, with the support of the U.N., try to drive back the attack. They landed on the southern tip that you see here, on the southern tip, and drove the Chinese back up, drove them back up to the North Koreans, to the Chinese border. Mao Zedong at that time intervened, and he drove that U.S. coalition back to this dividing line to where we have today, still there, North and South Korea. So think of all these events that took place leading up to finally where we are today. North Korea today, as we know, is still firing missiles, still taking their shots. Kim Jong-un, he sent a birthday greeting to Vladimir Putin. Wasn't that nice? I had a birthday greeting for my daughter from yesterday. But October 7th, just this past couple weeks ago. And what did he say? He congratulated him for crushing the challenges and threats of the United States. North Korea today, some, 72 years after all that, now is making strides toward developing a missile that will reach the U.S. cities. So what do we say about that New World Order of 1991? It wasn't a New World Order at all. It was just a pause in the old world disorder. Paul says in 1 Corinthians 7:31, brethren, the season is shortened, for the fashion of this world passeth away. All these things that we saw for all this period of time, but only a pause, not a change for the better, or even for more a better peace, a better transition. So in 2021, we now have the New World Order of 1991 becoming disorder. Think about it. Think about what has happened since we had this 2021 period of events. There's a new axis forming in the world against the democracies of the world. Russia, who we thought was dead with perestroika back in 1991, now alive and well and trying to come back to rebuild the old Soviet Union. That dissolution only put the world order on hold. Is there anybody that wants today's situation? Well, you hear people crying all over. This is not what they want. What are we going to do? A lot of things have changed and a lot of help. But personally, Ukraine, we feel for them, but Russia is willing to go as long and as hard as it takes to win this situation. Will the patience of the world run out in trying to supply and help against them? A lot of things have changed with social media, with all the things I mentioned, but this is a game-changing scenario. So I ask the question after this kind of brief review, is the biblical scenario of end time attacks on Israel impacted by this? Is it Gog and Magog being led by the Russian forces? Is that alive and well and perhaps closer? Well, I'm going to make an attempt in this to give a little different insight into the activities of those countries that are mentioned in that Ezekiel 38 scenario, who they are today and what they're doing, and how the situation in Israel has changed significantly from just 20 years ago when we first looked at this. Before we get to that particular point, remember Ezekiel says this has to happen before the end time can come. When I shall have gathered the house of Israel from the peoples among whom they are scattered, shall be sanctified in them in the sight of the nations, set apart from the nations, then shall they dwell in their own land. They shall dwell securely thereon. They shall build houses and plant vineyards, shall dwell securely. And that's always been the key point, the dwelling securely, as to when that takes place and how it takes place. And of course, in Ezekiel 38, remember, we have that concept that they will go up to this land, or as translated in the RBIC, open country of the unwalled villages. Go up to those that are at rest, dwelling securely without walls and not having gates, to take a spoil and to take a prey. Those that are gathered out of the nations, who else could that be but Israel, that dwell in the middle of the earth. For over 20 years, and I first presented that here back 20 years ago when we talked about this 1991, there were two simple truths I looked at for the Middle East. These were the two simple truths. Number one, if the Arab nations laid down their weapons, there would be no more war. If Israel laid down its weapons, there would be no more Israel. But we have seen some change in that. Let's look at what Netanyahu just said. I realize he's not the prime minister now, but he could be in another couple weeks. Netanyahu, in a piece called The Iron Triangle of Peace, he wrote in the Wall Street Journal opinion column, "For 25 years, we were told that peace with Arab nations would come only if we first resolved our conflict with the Palestinians, who wanted a state instead of, not next to, Israel. My government's approach has been made possible by a profound change in thinking among Arab leaders, who now view Israel not as an enemy, but as an indispensable ally against a belligerent Tehran." Shortly after I addressed a joint session of Congress in March 2015, several Arab leaders secretly requested to meet with me. These meetings ultimately foreshadowed the Abraham Accords. And I think you've heard several talks about the Abraham Accords. I know Brother David Rice has given several, and you know what those were. Orchestrated by the Trump administration that normalized Israel's relations. If the policies of peace through strength persist, we may soon be able to envision an end to the broader Arab-Israeli conflict. So I end with a question here. Netanyahu is trying to become prime minister again. Will he be reelected in just a few days on November the 1st? But this is a statement you wouldn't have seen 20 years ago. So another question. Will this lead to the land of unwalled villages? That's mentioned in Ezekiel 38, 11 to 13. You may get different answers from different brethren. So again, brethren, we give you suggestions and you decide whether there's any merit in those suggestions. But here he talked about that August 13th, 2020, no matter what you thought about President Trump, he did negotiate this peace with the Israel and United Arab Emirates peace agreement. That was joined by several other Middle East countries that you see here. Today, Israel flies over Saudi Arabia. Sudan is no longer an arms station for Iran. Now there's a joint whale rape project planned between connecting the region of Israel with Saudi Arabia when they join, and it's expected they will, these agreements. Let's look at what Ezekiel said in 38, or what he prophesied again. Two things. I read this before. The first was to go up to the land of unwalled villages in an attack, but second, to take a spoil. Those were the two objectives that are mentioned by Ezekiel. Two motives. One is a military motive. Don't know specifically what that might be, but it is a military motive to be. The second one, a commercial one, that's a very important one because it's part of that whole scenario where it says to go up there, but there's a purpose behind it, to take a spoil. And those are the two motives important. The countries of Ezekiel 38. There's always debate depending on who you read regarding these countries and which countries are mentioned by the names that are listed in Ezekiel 38. Most of these are taken from my associate with Brother Jim Parkinson, who, if you look at Genesis 10 and the RBIC Bible, you'll see a breakdown of the dispersion of the people in Genesis 10. And many of these are from those descendants. We can pin down what these various countries are. So, for example, what I'm saying here is the allies of the invader Gog, which I think is Russia, are from the north, Persia, Iran today, the Gomar, that's Turkey today, Kush, Yemen today, and or perhaps Black Africa, Put, which is Libya, Gomer, the Germanic and slave countries of Western Europe. Those are the allies invading Israel. The second coalition, just commercial interests, interesting. Sheba and Dedan, which would track to Saudi Arabia. Tarshish and the Young Lions, the Western world, namely England, North America, Australia. So let's take a look at where are these players today and their relationship with Israel. Russia. Of course, anybody knows where Russia is today. They've got a new power. That power is not just the attack on Ukraine, but you've seen what they've said. They have a doomsday arsenal, and they have a UN veto. And those are two powerful tools. Putin expected the international response to be similar to Stalin back in 1939, and that's why I showed you about that winter war, because that's what he expected to happen. But yet he got the reaction similar to what happened in South Korea in 1950. So the Ukrainian people, you got to admire their leader, former comedian Zelensky, spurred the West to action. We're not going to let this happen again. We're going to help fund Ukraine for as long as it takes. We'll see what that means. So Mark Twain, you know, he said, history does not repeat itself, but it rhymes. But even in this case, history does not repeat itself nor rhyme. U.S. President Biden just came out and said, he warned, this could lead to Armageddon. Now, doesn't that inspire really confidence in your citizens? You go running under your... I remember in school, grades, we were practicing for in case the bomb was dropped. You hide under your desk at school. Boy, was I stupid. You think you're getting under that desk, you're going to escape all this. Who knows? German Chancellor Scholz coined this term, or what he called Zeitenwende. And remember, Germany is classified in that Gomer category. But that word translates as turning point. Fewer countries today are committed to a world that ignores sovereignty or boundaries of other countries. There's a whole new behavior going on to change what's been the historical perspective. The United States has no commitment to the UN and the World Trade Organization, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, China. China wants center stage in the world. They're fighting for it and doing their best. Russia What does Russia want? They just want the same relevance that they always had. Japan today, and I have a question mark there because I don't really know where Japan fits in as a major country with those that are mentioned in Ezekiel 38. I just contacted Jim the other night, said, do you have any ideas? And the best is that it's categorized into the West. But Japan, fearful of what might happen there, they're rebuilding their pre-World War II capabilities. And they're ready to defend the Pacific. India, which is Kush in this prophecy, wants a permanent seat on the UN Security Council. Think what happens that they get a vote. We're one of the most populous countries in the world. We should have a seat. So all the failure of this global peace thing that started back in 1991, the UN, the World Bank, International Monetary Fund, the World Trade Organization, the G20 Organization of Countries, those countries have failed to help countries get to where they wanted to be from 1991. When I say that, we heard it mentioned earlier today, the debt crisis of countries around the world. We now have 53 countries at risk for serious debt crisis. And this just chart, by the way, shows you $305 trillion in global debt. That's in the first quarter of 2022. And you can see in all these cases, we have dangerous zones as you see these rise into the red. So the confidence in what was called the New World Order, well, that's eroding. Major powers are fractured. Relations aren't there anymore. International law, who's following international law? It's almost irrelevant. The norms that have been there for the last 20-some years are disintegrating. Nuclear proliferation in Northeast Asia is not just a likelihood, but it is growing. And what do we have? We're on the edge of international anarchy. I'll explain more as what I think that means when I say anarchy. It's not like everybody running amok. But what it means, true anarchy means the absence of a central organizing power. And that's what we see. We see all countries vying for a position in this world. For the first time this year, in 2021, last year, the world military expenditure passed $2 trillion. First time. So is it becoming a more peaceful world? No, just the opposite. Let's go back to Turkey, as I mentioned, or Togamar. They had a career diplomat as their new ambassador to Israel. That's a position that had been vacant for almost 5 years. He served as Turkey's ambassador to Palestine back in 2013, and he allowed the UN General Assembly vote granting Palestine non-member state status. Not a friend of Israel. During his tenure, he was awarded the Star of Jerusalem Order by Palestine. So we have Turkey in place now to be a much more impactful presence in Israel, which is exactly what was prophesied in Ezekiel. It was one thing that happened to shift this commercial and political focus to the Middle East. One of the things that happened in Russia's war in Ukraine, remember just a few weeks ago, an energy standoff from the Nord Stream 1 and the Nord Stream 2 pipeline, Russia's gas going into this period. When the gas supplies plunged, it caused prices to soar in Europe. And we know approaching the winter, there could be a significant crisis in Europe. Countries are struggling to find alternative supplies of energy to heat homes, electricity, run their factories. And those leaks overshadow the inauguration of this long-awaited Baltic pipeline that was supposed to bring Norwegian gas to Poland to bolster Europe's own energy, independence from Moscow. Turkey and Libya, both parts of those players, as you see here in Ezekiel 38, Turkey signs a hydrocarbon exploration deal with Libya. That was just done October 6th. And that's increased the rivalries now we have in the Middle East. Turkey wants a more balanced policy. But here's the key. Libya and Egypt have been at odds over gas exploration rights in the eastern Mediterranean. And this just heightens that significance. Remember, at this point, it's Libya, Tagomar, and Put that are part of that first group. But Egypt persuaded, interestingly enough, Israel to extract Gaza's natural gas. On October 6, 2022, they announced that as the European nations are seeking alternatives to Russian gas, Israel was persuaded to start extracting natural gas off the coast of the Gaza Strip. And now that development coincides with what's been the rising energy prices. So Middle Eastern gas exporters now are deepening their position in the EU, which was part of Gomer, that track from Ezekiel 38, is those that were trying to exploit for commercial purposes. That's the world's largest trading bloc at EU Invest. September 24th and 5th, Olaf Scholz, who I mentioned before, made an agreement to deliver gas to, from Qatar to Germany. Europe is also turning to North Africa and the East Mediterranean to replace part of the quantity of Russian oil and gas that they haven't had. That Russian gas tap was closed. It's useless to them now. So we're seeing new gas deals. Germany secured this gas deal with Saudi Arabia. Again, that focus on the Middle East from those who are looking at commercial plans. Israel. Israel plans to start gas exports to Europe. This was a headline in Bloomberg News just in August. Production from the oil fields you see here. You see the oil fields in Israel from Tamar and Leviathan, which were two of the largest. They got a memorandum of understanding, that's what the MOU is, with Egypt and the European Union. The gas will start being shipped to Egypt and then re-exported to the EU. Natural gas has become the game changer for Israel. Isn't it coincidental that they've discovered some of the largest gas fields in the world? Energean PLC, which is an Israeli company, holds rights to Karish Field that you see on here as well, up in the right upper right corner. In October 6th, they discovered a brand new huge field called Hermes, which will be coming online. But what does it mean? What does it mean for Israel in connecting it with these enemies of Ezekiel 38? In the Persian Gulf, South Pars, North Dome Field, it's the world's largest natural gas field. It's co-owned now by Iran and Qatar. North Pars, Kish, and Golshan are the other major gas fields in the region. What it means is the Middle East now holds the largest proved natural gas reserves by region in the world. Do you think there will be a focus on the Middle East? I certainly think it's happening. Israel and Azerbaijan, which is part of the Gomer, Ezekiel 38, are now involved in tensions with Iran. Israel is importing fuel from Azerbaijan. Israel is the largest supplier of weapons to them. According to Stockholm, the International Peace Research Institute, 60% of the defense imports originated in Israel. And in 2020, that number jumped to 70%. Israel's a major player in now supplying arms to some of the very people that are involved with this. October 2021, there were reports that Azerbaijan was buying Iron Dome missile defenses from Israel and considering buying Israel's most current defense mechanism, Arrow 3 missile defense. Interesting, in Azerbaijan, 95% of its population are Muslims. Say no more about that, but Israel's most feared enemy is the Shia population in the world right after Iran. So we'll see how this plays out, but again, it puts a new focus on Israel and its supplier. So we could spend a lot more time on this, but let's just say, what does it all mean? The activity in the Middle East already, as we see in this scenario, surrounds the players of Ezekiel 38. With the invasion of the Ukraine, the tensions are escalating. The world is going through a current reorder. What's going to be on the other end? We don't know. No Western power now controls Middle East activity. It's the first time that's happened since Israel was a nation in 1948. The ball is now in their court. So we see likely confrontations will continue there over energy. Energy is the one thing that every country needs. Energy will shake up the alliances, the agreements that we find there. That's really, I think, the significance we see in this 20 years later kind of scenario that we started out with. The West and Russia, we're seeing them locked now in confrontation once again through Syria. Syria, it was perhaps part of that Togarmah group, and Iran, which is Persia, one of those alliances with Russia. They're locked in a duel right now. Regional arms is no longer in the forefront. Russia has a sustainable military presence. 10 days prior to the Ukraine invasion, they had Eastern Mediterranean exercises with bombers and MiG interceptors. So they're already rehearsing activities in the Middle East. And there's also reports now of Russia recruiting Syrian fighters for urban warfare. Well, that will tell you, where do they need that? Certainly going to the south, the enemy from the north going into the south, and that represents Israel. August 2022, this report came out. Iranian officials now speak openly about something long denied by Tehran, as it enriches uranium at its closest ever levels to weapons-grade material. The Islamic Republic is ready to build an atomic weapon at will. Ezekiel 38 gives us this scenario. I've just given you a very brief overview of today versus what we see in that prophecy. But it's important to realize that Ezekiel 38:8 says it's a long period of time. King James Version says after many days they would be visited. Rotherham says after many days thou shalt muster thy forces. This is all on the attack against Israel. And the Septuagint reads, he shall be prepared after many days, and he shall come at the end of years. We don't know if it's tomorrow. We don't know if it's 20 years from now. What we see is this reshaping of the world once again, focusing even more intensely on this Middle East scenario. Brethren, we don't want this to scare us. We must stay together. We must remain calm. Remember, nothing is done without God's permission. When we read the scriptures, it should bring us excitement. It should solidify our faith. But it can't help, myself included, create some high anxiety as we live through these final years of the harvest, however long they may be. People talk about it's unprecedented times, but every time is unprecedented. But certainly we have here situations that we've never seen before. We must take comfort that God will never leave us. He will never abandon us. Deuteronomy 31:6 tells us that. And one key importance, brethren, and lessons of this, don't be persuaded about things and events by those who don't know Scripture. That's what you hear when you hear the broadcasters or you read a book. Let's take that and put it in the perspective of the Scriptures. Remember, the one mantra in the news media is, if it bleeds, it leads. You will hear nothing but the worst case scenario in everything. We know the best case scenario is exactly what is shaping up today, because God is going to use that to bring about His kingdom. And it's going to be glorious, and we see Israel more prominent now amongst the nations we've ever seen before. Let us take comfort in that. And when I close, I want to play for you a recording of Psalm 91. If you are troubled, take out your Bible and read Psalm 91. It will calm your spirit. After Ernie has his closing announcements, I'll play that closing hymn for you. Remember, are they not all ministering spirits sent forth to do service for the sake of them that shall inherit salvation? Brethren, that is you and I.